Let me just do this. Good morning to everybody. Valerie, can you hear me?
Chair, the members can hear you. Everyone is online. The meeting correct. And I just want to inform you that today we have Mr. Ziegenhalt from ASSA. We have representatives from CASA. And we have Mr. Rennie van Zyl, one of the stakeholders that made the submissions online today. So all three are here, ready for the presentations. The information has been shared with the members. So you are ready to proceed with the first presenter, Mr. Ziegenhalt, followed by CASA and then Mr. van Zyl. Chairperson, there was an apology that was received from Mr. Sithole and Ms. Nolochungu. There were no other apologies.
Thank you, Valerie. Mr. Ziegenhalt is representing the Airlines Association of Southern Africa. Am I correct?
Yes, Chairperson, and he's already in the meeting.
Okay, let me just take this opportunity to welcome everybody and regret the problem that I have here. You are all welcome to the meeting, and I think without any waste of time, let's accept the apologies and accept our guests today who are going to be presenting with us. Without any further ado, let me allow Mr. Ziegenhalt, who's going to present the submission by the Airlines of Association of Southern Africa. Can we hear me, sir?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, and thank you very much for the opportunity to address you today. I do have a presentation. Is it in order that I start the slide and to present? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think it's not for the first time we are seeing each other.
Absolutely.
We will continue seeing each other. Let's listen to you today and see if you can't help us and we can't help you. Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'll share my screen and I'll commence with the presentation.
Thank you very much.
Can you see me? I hope that the screen is visible. Thank you again, Mr. Chairman, for the.
Yes, your screen is visible, sir. You can go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for the opportunity to address you on this very important subject in respect of the proposal to amend the put on the submission of the Civil Aviation Amendment Bill. And just to remind those that may not know who we are, the Airlines Association of Southern Africa does represent the SADC-based airlines, or all South African scheduled commercial airlines. And we have the privilege of working with government, industry, and all business leaders, policymakers, to deal with all aspects across the aviation and the airline business. And our objective is to work in the mutual best interests of our members and to ensure that there's a sustainable, viable, and profitable airline industry and air transport industry to be able to enable the growth of South Africa and the region. In respect of aviation legislation, we are mandated by our members to engage and to raise issues of concern with government and regulators, including the Department of Transport and Civil Aviation Authority, on many issues of policy and legislation that impact the operations. And we get very involved in all aspects of this many pieces of legislation, as I know that you're aware, Chairman. Our members are, there are 20 airline members. I just listed the logos on the screen. I think you're aware of all the South African-based airlines, as well as the regional airlines, as I mentioned. So they're 20s, 9 South African airlines and 11 regional airlines, all constrained to the SADC countries, as well as Indian Ocean Islands. We also have as associate members, there are 37 of them, and they're all rather big, some of them multinational organizations, but also very much local companies that add value and are partner service providers manufacturers that add value to the airline business, and they are very valued as members as well. So, Mr. Chairman, in this context, the issues I'll deal with, and I'll try and keep this presentation very focused to specific areas. I'll give you a presentation context and then talk to the, secondly, to the Portfolio Committee's proposed amendments to the bill, which was invited by the 30th of November and on which we provided a response on the 30th of November. I think this also needs to be looked at in context with the previous presentations, even the one that we've made on the 4th of March when we met for the first time and we made a presentation in Parliament in Cape Town. And then also the later presentation made by the Department of Transport in August, in 18th of August, in which we also submitted a response. And then we'll make a conclusion and some recommendations. In the context, Chair, the current draft of the Civil Aviation Bill is the B44-2018 version. We are aware as industry of no further version that has been published. As I mentioned, there was a DOT presentation to the Portfolio Committee on the 18th of August, and we submitted a letter in response on the 25th of August. So what we are going to be focusing on is the proposed amendment bill that the Portfolio Committee has proposed and to which we responded. There will be other matters. What we are trying to do is just to make sure that we understand and see clarity on previous matters that were discussed and that were raised in the interim, and to see what their status is and to get clarification on that. We move on to the proposed amendment to the Civil Aviation Bill. This is by specifically the Portfolio Committee of Transport's proposed amendments. Mr. Chairman, there are two major amendments that were proposed. The first one is reflected under Clause 13, which reflects the Section 74 of the Principal Act. And I've just quoted exactly what is in the Portfolio Committee's presentation. And the important aspect to note is that this is an additional clause which will basically be to ensure that a person who has collected money fees levied on behalf of the Civil Aviation Authority, when they are liquidated, the Civil Aviation Authority will be entitled as a preferential creditor to recover this money. I think that's the important aspect in that area. And it's the important aspect I'd like to focus on is the area where it says on behalf of the Civil Aviation Authority. And I think that's an important point there. Then this must be considered together with clause 60, which deals with the proposed amendment to Section 155, subsection 1XX, and that talks about the legal action that can be taken by failure to transmit to the authority. And so I'll refer to those both, and then there will be one further clause that I'll refer to at a later stage. Now, Mr. Chairman, we as ASA believe that obviously these amendments have been driven by the impact of a number of circumstances that have really hit us quite severely. First one being the business rescue of South African Airways, happened in December 2019. Business rescue in the current provisional liquidation of SA Express, that was declared on the 6th of February and 2020. And then also the business rescue of Comair Limited, which was in 5th of May 2020. Clearly, Chair, everybody is aware, and we've been focused on that for the entire year of 2020, the COVID-19 lockdown and the prohibition of air services on the 26th of March 2020. This led to a collapse of revenue for the airlines and for many other aviation organizations, and a severe liquidity crisis. There has been phased reintroduction of the air services, but this has obviously been also tempered, as you will be aware, of changing restrictions, changing lockdown, changing risk levels, and that has happened both domestically and internationally. And obviously, I think one of the biggest concerns is has been a delayed settlement of debt, as airlines have actually run out of cash because they're not receiving any cash, and they're trying to manage their cash crisis. So we are very aware that there are issues related to the problem of being able to settle all their debts. Chair, just to give you some context, and this is international sourced data from IATA, the global airline losses for 2020 are projected at $118 billion, and that pretty much covers all the profits that were made from about 2013 or so of the profits of the airline industry. And this is global, I'm talking worldwide. The projected loss for 2021 is $38 billion. As things are going, my personal view is that probably will be higher by the end of this year. And I'll go into that as well. The African airline losses in 2020 are estimated to be about $3 billion, and for 2021 expected to be $2 billion. And that's higher than, lower, I should put it that way, than the traditional $200 million US dollars that Africa loses cumulatively on an annual basis. From the international industry performance, and that's passengers and flights and capacity, you can see the numbers are split up into international and domestic. The passengers of 2020 versus 2019 are down by 75.6%. In the domestic side, down 48.8%. The only reason that is happening is that some airlines have allowed their airlines to fly domestically. And that's also the case in South Africa, where, as you know, we opened up domestic travel before and that was on the 1st of June. And on the international travel, we opened up on the 1st of October 2020. Capacity-wise, there you see the drop in international capacity of 68% and domestic 35.7%. The differences between the passengers and capacity, the indicates that the load factors are a lot lower than what they were previously because of the differences between the passenger numbers and the capacity numbers. And the load factors on aircraft have dropped on average by about 19 to 20%. In South Africa, and I've taken these numbers from from AXA's numbers, you can see the performance of 2020 versus 2019. And these are all, in terms of the total numbers on the first two rows there, are the financial year to date from April 2020 to January 2021. And you can see on that side, this is the South African version, the passenger totals have gone down by 71.9%, and the flights went down on the fourth column by 64.8%. So a very similar trend to what we've seen in the global numbers as well. Interesting statistics to show, and I've only included the two for December and January. December numbers, we had almost reached 50% of pre-COVID-19 numbers, but the passenger numbers in January have declined further. So month in December because of the peak and the holidays, but when the adjusted level 3 lockdown was announced and there were some further restrictions placed, you can see what happened to the airline bookings and the passenger numbers. So in terms of flights, the same sort of situation has occurred on that area, where you've got the reductions as well for flight reductions of 35.2 in December and in January 45.1 as airlines actually landed up having to cancel flights because of their further restrictions. I've broken down on the second and third lines between domestic and international. And again, you can see what's happening in domestic side there. The domestic passenger numbers are 77% below, but in December, we were 46% below, so they were already would receive. We'd reached more than 50% of pre-COVID-19 levels in December 2019, but in January, the numbers declined. You may ask the question why the number in the passenger total of 77% is much higher than the two numbers, and that is as a result, it's an average from April to January, and we had very little traffic in April. We had no traffic in April and May, and some traffic in June as well. And a similar trend that we can see in the international side, the numbers are worse for international because, as you know, we only started much later in the year, in 1 October. And also we've had a number of airlines come in. And as you've probably seen in the media, a lot of the international airlines have had to withdraw specifically when we had the announcement of the second variant. And we know that, unfortunately, airlines have withdrawn some of their flights. So, Chairman, if we look at the some graphs that I kind of used from IATA, you can see that the graph shows the massive decline in traffic from March through to April, and then you start to see a recovery at the bottom of that V. Where the issue related to that is that we're obviously looking at getting a better growth, particularly in 2021, and the top solid red line there is indicative of what one would have expected if the COVID-19 situation had started to normalize and obviously vaccinations had started to come through. But the dotted line is a further scenario, which is possibly where we're heading because of the variants that has come in. So that the propensity to travel is a lot less now because of the variants. And if you can see this graph here, shows how forward bookings have taken place for the airlines. You can see the massive drop, the waterfall in March, and then as you can see, slowly as we started to increase travel, you can see the forward booking starting to grow. But at the end of that graph, towards the end there, you can see that there's a drop off again in forward bookings, and that's again largely driven by the variants issue and the concern in the international airlines' hesitation to actually introduce further services and to bring services in and to withdraw them and introduce different restrictions. And I just want to say that I really believe that South Africa has actually taken one of the more proactive and more consistent steps to actually to encourage aviation to continue. It's unfortunate that the states themselves are not all aligned as was probably would obviously been preferred by all airlines, and that goes globally as well as in South Africa. So, Mr. Chairman, taking this in mind, and I really wanted to just present that to give you a context of where the industry finds itself, and to obviously say that is the airlines that are suffering there, but it's also every single stakeholder is suffering, including the Civil Aviation Authority, AXA, ATNS, Weather Service, all our service providers, and many other associated companies such as the ground handlers, as well as travel and tourism, which has really been severely impacted. And to state that from a perspective that all service providers, we agree, should receive dues for the service that they provide. There's no doubt about that. But as I mentioned, everybody is in the same position. So my view is also that the South African aviation industry must have a civil aviation authority. It must have airports. It must have air traffic navigation services. But in times of crisis, the state as the shareholder has a duty to ensure the financial stability of these companies. South Africa must also, though, have an airline industry, and its sustainability based on what I've is in question, and there's a lot of questions being asked about the sustainability. The airline industry has, to date, received very little, no support from government. I think I must qualify that and say, yes, you have. There has been support, and it's particularly in our case, the UIF TERS that has been implemented, and it has enabled some of our employees of our members to actually receive a UIF TERS grant on the base from government and Department of Labor, and that has been very welcome. Where I'm talking about it is that we have written many proposals to government to look for support, either in financial support, either in some sort of an injection or grant or tax relief of some nature or loans or loan guarantees. And the other aspect has been in the question of user charges. And obviously user charges are what we pay, what the airlines and the passengers pay to the CAA, as well as to AXA and ATNS and Weather Service in particular. So some infrastructure service providers have proposed some relaxation and some concessions, I should say, and these are intended to relieve operating cost burdens. The CAA is not, unfortunately, one of those. So I just place that on record, but obviously there are others that are looking at the matter at this stage. So airlines want to settle debts, but due to the liquidity and cash crisis, some settlement is a challenge. And we were asked the question that the proposal placed the CAA above all other industry stakeholders in the credit line, and we asked the question, why? I also, we looked, Mr. Chairman, at the some legal considerations, and we were concerned about the preferential status in terms of the Companies Act and others. And I think the basic thing that comes down to it is that in terms of the regulations, 187.02.1, this does state that the CAA charge is payable by aircraft passengers departing on flights, and is direct to the, and is payable to the Civil Aviation Authority as per 187.02-2, and that's due to the authority. So the important aspect to state is, and as stated in the proposed legislation, is that the passenger safety charge is collected by the airline as an agent of the South African Civil Aviation Authority. So if the amendments are as proposed by the Portfolio Committee and in clause 13 and 60 are applied, this would make, and we understand that would make ECAA as a professional creditor for the collection of the passenger service charge, and we say only. And the reason that we say that is that no other levies or charges under Part 187 would fall into this category, as they are not charges collected on behalf of the Civil Aviation Authority. The CAA actually charges the airlines and the operators directly for those charges, and that should make the CAA a concurrent creditor. It's not collected on behalf. So just in summary on this area, the Clause 13 amendment would make the CAA a preferential creditor, and we believe that that principle must be applied consistently. In respect of Clause 60, it talks about the legal action that needs to be taken, and that we believe does fall in line with the process that obviously if you are contrary to breaking legislation, then regulation, then you are liable to face some sort of a legal action. And that probably means going after the airlines as defaulters. But again, as I said, we do not believe that any other monies, fees, or charges or levies other than the passenger safety charge can be included in the preferential creditor status. Mr. Chairman, I'd also like to bring one further clause which was not included in the proposal. But 155 brackets 1 WW states that it requires any person who collects any monies, fees, or charges on behalf of the Civil Aviation Authority establish a trust account, and such fees must be kept for onward transmission to the Civil Aviation Authority. We believe that in that regard, this needs to be looked at, that section 155.1 and XX and 151.1 WW need to be looked at together. So we are proposing, Mr. Chairman, that we amend 155.1XX to exclude the words money, fees, charges, or levies, and to include there instead just the word passenger safety charge collected on behalf of the Civil Aviation Authority. And we further submit, Mr. Chairman, that 155.1W be deleted, since at this stage, if your legislation was to be passed, CAA would be protected by its preferential creditor status in the amended legislation. And then for consistency, we say that CAA would be a concurrent creditor for all the other monies, levies, charges, et cetera, that they would be due in terms of 187. So that's, Mr. Chairman, I just want to then come back and say, in view to the state of the industry, we still maintain that we are concerned that the CAA is placed above the rest of the industry stakeholders in respect of preferential creditor status. And we understand, although I cannot find commitment, and I am under correction on this one, that we do understand, we know that CAA applied to government for some financial assistance, and we do understand that they have received some financial assistance, but I'm unable to verify that. So if it's not correct and that they haven't received it as yet, then I'm under correction, but I would withdraw that. But we think that they have received some assistance. So, Mr. Chairman, our recommendation is that the preferential creditor status not be pursued and be removed from the proposed amendment bill, because in all honesty, based on what I've said here, we do not believe that it has to be included. If it is pursued, then we do recommend that the amendments to 155.1XX and WW, to ensure consistency with the principles applied, that it's only in respect of passenger safety charge collected on, by the operator on behalf of the CAA, and all the other charges are charged directly to the operator, where CAA should be a concurrent creditor. Mr. Chairman, to come towards the end, the other issues that have been raised, as we noted earlier, there is no further revision on the proposed civil aviation amendment bill, and the only amendment on the table, as we understand it, is that proposed by the portfolio committee. And accordingly, we assume that the proposals made by the DOT in its submission of the 18th of August and responded to us by on the 25th of August 2020 are not being considered, other than the issue of the preferential status of BCAA. That one aspect is that has always been of concern is the principles of the Aviation Safe Investigation Board, and that we believe that the principles of that as a separate entity from the CAA must be maintained. Just to, there was one aspect I wanted to raise regarding the ASIB, as I'm raised on the 4th of March, was on the presentation to the Portfolio Committee, was the lack of clarity on the executive appointed by the CAA responsible for accident investigation in relation to the CAA. And with some concern on the independence of the person appointed in terms of Section 28.5, who reports to the ASIB through the CAA, and is this the same executive appointed by the CAA? But there was, we still had some concerns on the clarity of the this executive and the potential for some conflicts of interest potentially. So in summary, Chair, the critical issues are that the industry is in crisis, there's severe loss of traffic brought about by lockdown. Changing lockdown restrictions have made it very unstable in terms of the way in which the passenger numbers and flights are moving forward. And in respect of CAA as a preferential creditor, it could be applied for the collection of passenger safety charge, but for all other charges, we believe the CAA should be a concurrent creditor. However, as mentioned, we do not believe it is necessary to impose the status, and we recommend that the preferential creditor status be removed. And we seek clarification on the outstanding issues as I may issue from that time. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my presentation. I really thank you for the time, and to all the colleagues and honourable members. Thank you very much.
Are you done, Chris?
Yes, I am, sir. Thank you very much, and I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your presentation and inputs. Let's allow members to ask any clarity-seeking questions. Let me see hands. And those who just want to really appreciate, I know they are there. Mr. Chris Zwagentel is here. The first hand will be Honorable Hunsinger, followed by Honorable Mann, followed by Honorable Lawrence McDonald. In that order, those three hands, as I've noted them.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation, Mr. Swiegenthal. First of all, I would like to know whether your presentation and the content was circulated to all members. Related to that, whether following the circulation to all members, whether this presentation was endorsed by all members. I would then, in relation to your recommendation of the preferential creditor clause, which you suggest to be removed, have you done or are you aware of any other similar organization as the Civil Aviation Authority of South Africa internationally that have a similar preferential access to monies owed in circumstances as what we anticipate with this inclusion? So are there any other civil aviation or similar institutions in the world that have preferential creditor status similar to what we want to develop in our legislative framework? Then related to the current situation, and I thank you for the skillful inclusion of, you know, within the context of this amendment bill to give us a picture of the devastation which COVID has had and lockdown also has had on the aviation industry. Thank you for presenting that. It is really devastating. And very shocking. You have also mentioned that your slide said no support from government, and then verbally you said little support. What other support would have saved and supported the aviation industry positively, and what still can be done? Because certainly this engagement should include a conversation wider than just suggestions on the bill. Thank you, Chairperson. That is what I want to ask. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Hunsinger. Thank you, Bayam. Honorable Mani Jamba.
Honorable Jamba, yes, that's the right one. Morning, Chair. Thanks for the opportunity, and morning, colleagues. Thank you for the presentation. Mine is one seeking clarity. I think in slide 19, if I picked it up well, you are speaking of requesting consistency. There is a line there that talks about that. I could not pick up if you could explain what consistency is required in your view. My colleague has welcomed the insight into the devastation into the aviation industry, which I share. However, it brings a question to me to say it would appear, which is subject to your correction, that your case, amongst other things, is motivated by the devastation that the industry has seen, much lesser than what the actual implications of the proposal of the preferred creditor status is. That is my reading. You can correct me, therefore, if I'm missing your point there. Slide 21, where you talk about section 155 and so forth. I would like, through your permission, Chair, that maybe the presenter just re-explains it, because I could not understand the rationale at all. And again, I'm linking it to my earlier point about the devastation that has occurred in the industry, which we all understand. And the slide that was the last slide, slide 25, where it seems like the presenter is separating certain fees or levies that should be a concurrent creditor, not a preferred creditor, in other words. So for me, section 155, that seems to be at the core of your proposal. If that could be repeated for explanation, I will appreciate it, Chair. Last but not least, in slide 22, you mentioned that you believe that AXA could have received some bailouts from governments, but you can't back it up and so forth. The question is, what is the relevance to what is before us now? Thank you very much, Chair.
Jambas, awubingelela bangakini mfowethu, ngiyabonga. Thank you very much. Akhbare Lawrence McDonald.
Baie dankie, voorsitter Mangete. Good morning, members. Thank you, Chris Zwillenthal, for your presentation. I want to say that your presentation on this let's start with the preferred creditor. I strongly disagree with you in the sense that the Civil Aviation Authority must definitely be a preferred creditor. I do agree partially with you on the structuring of how the fees that are owed to them by airlines itself could be just normal creditor fees, but the fees collected on behalf should definitely be included as preferred creditors. Because if you go and look at the amount of money owed by these other airlines that have closed in the recent history, not just the SAAs, but the ones before that, has put a severe strain on government and severe strain on the South African Civil Aviation Authority to do its job properly. And I think, Chairperson, through you, that we must find a way that to protect our institutions, our state-owned enterprises, and specifically something like the Civil Aviation Authority that does a very, very important role in keeping the airspaces safe. And in that light, I think that the preferred creditor would be the way to go. How we structure it, this might be the question. Then on the Airline Safety Investigation Board, I want to ask the presenter, is there no other way that would make everybody happy instead of creating a separate board, which we don't have money for at the moment, because just as much as what the airlines are under pressure because of COVID, the whole country is under pressure. So there must be a way that we can find each other halfway. And can we not put our minds together to find a solution whereby we create an accident investigation board that does not cost an arm and a leg, that it's not in a separate entity, but also that it could be housed within the South African Civil Aviation Authority with some sort of its own autonomy. I thank you, Chairperson.
Its own autonomy. These were the only hands, and they are still the hands that I've noted. I hope I've not left anybody outside. So with that, let's go back to Mr. Chris Zorgenthal.
Thank you, Chairman and honorable members. Thank you very much. Certainly, I'll address the questions. Honourable Hunsinger, I did not circulate my presentation to my members. However, what I have discussed, I've discussed with them verbally and have received support for the positions that we've taken consistently throughout this year or the last year in terms of the position on the Civil Aviation Bill, Amendment Bill. So I cannot say that I've got all the members to say they've seen this presentation, they're 100% happy with it. In respect of the preferential creditor status, I also am not aware of international organizations that have preferential creditor status. We looked at this from a perspective that we've worked in this industry the industry's been going for in South Africa as long as we all know, and we've never had to rely on the preferential creditor status to try and safeguard the finances of a particular organization. And the question I raise is that if a preferential creditor status is endorsed to a particular organization, what is stopping the similar sort of process to go through other organizations, other state organizations? And in my mind, that would be contrary to the spirit of the Companies Act as well. We all know that the problem at the moment with this situation is that people are genuinely battling because of the cash crisis they've got, and that's what they're trying to stretch it. And every organization is going through that same problem. even all the state organizations, any other company who's owed money by others are battling to get the money out of them. So it's a similar situation. And the reason I say that the preferential creditor status is probably not required is because the state stands behind the CAA and its other state organizations. And we can't expect the passengers and the customers to help take and the airlines to take the state organizations out of their financial difficulties. It's like saying to the CAA or to the AXA or to AT&S or any other infrastructure service provider, you know, why don't you just put up the fees by 100% because we need that extra money. So let's just put up the charges and ask the airlines and the passengers to pay. They won't be able to pay because they're not getting the revenue themselves. So we're all in that same position. Honorable Hunsinger, you also asked about the question of the other areas of support. We have written numerous letters to various organs within government, the Department of Transport, Treasury, also Minister of Trade and Industry, Department of Trade and Industry, and we've requested support in a number of areas such as, let me give you the one that is the most recent, which we have had absolutely no response. We understand, and we're on record as also not supporting the introduction of the carbon tax for domestic aviation in South Africa. What we've asked for is to have to waive the domestic tax on domestic aviation, which came into effect on the 1st of July 2019, and to waive that until the 31st of December, 31st of October 2021. So that would also assist in some of the relieving some of the operating cost burden. We've also asked in situations such as the loan guarantees, and we know that the government made available some significant loan guarantees options, but obviously loans that are available. But as I think has been also reported, some of the conditions that have been imposed on those loans are quite significant, and the airlines have decided not to try and increase their debt in that regard, and obviously try and stretch their cash status, which is the issue at question here. There are other aspects. We've looked at the question of a cash injection, similar to what's happened in the United States of America or in Europe, where even, for example, and that's not been even offered, but we've suggested even consideration, and it would be up to the airlines to decide, of equity participation within those airlines, and that there could be certain conditions. So those are the sort of areas that we've been looking at. We've also looked at situations that we've spoken to all the infrastructure service providers and looked at deferment of payment, to not go after them when they are late, to give them payment and to reduce some of the user charges. And obviously those are the areas where I'm saying that there are some discussions in that area ongoing. I think that we're waiting for some resolution on some of those areas, and we're hoping there will be something that will give the support to the airlines. For Honorable Monsu, I hope I got that right, the pronunciation. My apologies if not. The consistency I'm talking about in slide 19, I just want to make sure that I know what it refers to. I just want to make sure. Yes, the situation is that we're saying that the legislation that is talked about is on behalf of, so that the airlines collect the passenger safety charge on behalf of the Civil Aviation Authority. So what we are saying is that, and maybe the word consistently is not entirely correct, but what I'm saying is if you have a preferential status, it must only be applicable to a charge that is collected on behalf of the CAA. So any other charges, such as the Part 187 fees, the fuel levies, any other charges that are charged directly to the airline are not collected on behalf of the CAA. They're actually invoiced by the CAA directly to the airline, and on that basis, they should not fall into that category, and the CAA must become a concurrent creditor in that regard. So what it does do, and I think that's probably one of the concerns, even from Honourable McDonald, maybe. And that is that we do understand that that you would have two separate situations. The CAA to collect debt would have two sort of different situations, which may be problematic for them. But we're just saying we need to be consistent and say just because one is done doesn't mean the other set of charges also are required. You also asked a question in terms of slide 25. Just want to grab 25 as well. I think maybe I see that. I think that's maybe the I may have answered the question. If I haven't, please come back to me. But I think that's the principle I was trying to talk about there. Then you also asked the Honourable Monkey, you also asked a question about the CA receiving assistance and what is the relevance to this discussion. The fact that the CAA receives assistance or has probably received assistance, and I cannot, as I said, I cannot get confirmation. I tried to look for that yesterday and today, is the fact that it is that the government is prepared to support it. So on that basis, we believe that what we are saying, that the state has a responsibility to its core state organizations responsible for aviation, that proves the point that there is a plan to make, that they can make a plan. And as I said, I think the airlines themselves, it's not that they don't want to do a to do that.
Thank you. We were not hearing you. I think you are clear now, Chris. You can continue.
Sorry, I don't know. Where did I go? Get lost there.
You were cutting at the point when I interjected. But you are clear now.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chairman. Thank you very much. Yes, so I just said, I think that was I saying that in terms of the CAA receiving assistance, that proves, satisfies the point that the state has accepted that it needs to give the CAA some assistance to be able to help it through its financial difficulties. So I think that's why we're saying that we don't think that needs the preferential status, actually. Honourable MacDonald, I think I understood you to say that you disagree with my I think you said no. You agree that the CAA should have a preferential creditor status for the passenger safety charge, but I think you also questioned whether they should have a preferential status for the other charges. That's the way I understood it when I heard the question, and that you mentioned there that you wanted to ensure that there's a way in between to protect our institutions, and maybe there's a middle of the road situation. I think I think that we would be open to looking at that together with the CAA, together with the Department of Transport, and many of my other industry colleagues who are on the call, and maybe some of my colleagues that are going to be presenting after me may actually raise this as a particular issue, and that maybe they may even be more qualified to say what would work. But I would certainly say that from our perspective as ASA, we would be open to that discussion and finding a way, because we do understand that financial problem, the financial situation. But at the same time, if we're running a really internationally recognized aviation industry in South Africa, we're probably the most highly regarded aviation industry in Africa. I think we need to maintain that status. So, and I think one of the core issues is for aviation aircraft safety investigation to be a completely separate unit from the CAA. And if we can find one way to maintain its independence in some other way, then so be it. Honourable Chairman, I think that is maybe. I hope I've answered everybody. If I haven't, I'm happy to take again further questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members who had raised the question. I'm sure Chris has answered all your questions. If there is any question that he has not been answered, you are free to indicate so that we give him that chance. Otherwise, if you don't have anything to say, I will have to take this opportunity to thank you, sir, because I don't see any hands, for your commitment and your interest in this industry. You always are here when we talk about civil aviation and putting your views forward as you see them. We will find some time to combine all your concerns together with the rest of the presenters at the end of the day and see how best can we move this industry forward. I really want to take this opportunity to thank you.
Honourable Chairman and Honourable Members, thank you very much. It's a privilege to have been able to address you today, and I really thank you for the opportunity. Take care. God bless. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. You are released.
Thank you.
Thank you. Valerie, my next presenter is a presenter that is representing Commercial Airlines Association of Southern Africa. Am I right, Valerie? Valerie, can you hear me?
Chair, just a reminder, I'm on sick leave, but you are right, yes. It is from Pasa.
Okay, Valerie. Please don't paint me as a... Yeah, okay. I'm used to Valerie. Okay. Is the presenter ready? Can we get the presenter ready, Advocate? Are you in the meeting?
Yes. I am ready.
There is Mr. Robert...
Garbett.
Oh, Garbett.
Yes.
How are you, sir?
I'm tired and sick of COVID. I look forward to the day, and I hope I make it because I'm 76, when there will no longer be COVID. Otherwise, I'm very happy to be here and to be presenting to you.
We wish you all the best, and may your wish, all your wishes become true, sir. Otherwise, at your age, you qualify to be my father, but allow me, because I'm chairing as your chairperson, to give you an opportunity to talk to us. Thank you.
You can call me Muna Makholo if you like.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Honorable Chairman, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, the Commercial Aviation Association of Southern Africa, known as CASA, is grateful for the opportunity of addressing you today. This association was formed in 1944 and represents the majority of general aviation practitioners in South Africa. I, Rob Garbett, the director of the Commercial Aviation Association of South Africa, and a member of the Civil Aviation Regulations Committee, CARCOM, for well over 15 years, have been asked to present this statement. Other members of our group today are the CEO of CASA, Leon Dillman, and the COO, Kevin Story. You have received our letter of 30th November 2020. We wish only to emphasize or expand certain points before asking whether you have questions or whether you require any further clarification. The Civil Aviation Regulations Committee is an important, independent, and freestanding aid to the Minister of Transport. Its members represent the full range of aviation activities. This is prescribed in the current Act. Its 22 members include 5 South African Civil Aviation Authority employees and 1 from the Department of Transport. Other representatives of state enterprises also by statute serve on the Civil Aviation Regulations Committee. The Commercial Aviation Association of Southern Africa has been a member of CARCOM for 30 years. Many hours have been spent at CASA meetings, at CARCOM meetings, debating regulations and technical standards placed before this body. Meetings take place on average every 3 months. The Act actually calls for 12 meetings per year. Should the Civil Aviation Regulations Committee lose its independent status, the temptation... I'll just repeat that. Should the Civil Aviation Regulations Committee lose its present independent status, the temptation of allowing other bodies to override the existing functions of the Civil Aviation Regulations Committee will exist. Its very dependence and makeup is the strength. It is absolutely essential that the full cooperation and involvement of the general aviation and airline industry make itself available to the South African Civil Aviation Authority generally, but particularly in regulation. Am I unmuted, Mr. Chairman?
No, sir, you are not. I can hear you vividly. Okay.
All right. I'll just repeat my last statement. It is absolutely essential that the full cooperation and involvement of the general aviation and airline industry make itself available to the South African Civil Aviation Authority generally, but particularly in the regulation development process. The Minister is assured, if there is a CARCOM, of a sure level of independent, wide-ranging expertise having been incorporated into the regulations. The private enterprise members of the Civil Aviation Regulations Committee provide their time totally free of charge and do so due to the vital role that the Civil Aviation Regulations Committee plays in regulation development. If this was not in the Act, the legal requirement embodied in the Act that forces attendance by these bodies will no longer apply. And the bodies I'm referring to are those such as ATNS, the South African Police Service, AXA, and so on. Do not allow the perception to arise by removing the demand for CARCOM in the Act that the South African Civil Aviation Authority or the Department of Transport wish to ring fence their authority. This would not be a healthy perception. Striking sections 156, 7, 8, 9, 160, 161, 162, and the amendment of 163 will undermine the very independence of CARCOM. These sections were carefully constructed to protect the integrity of regulation development and to prevent abuse of the process. SANS section 162 will allow the South African Civil Aviation Authority to introduce emergency safety and security regulations without the present subsequent consultation with the aviation industry represented by CARCOM, which provides essential checks and balances. The amendment of section 73 does not define the words as prescribed. We find it strange that the Civil Aviation Regulations Committee is not mentioned at all, either here or in the explanatory notes referring to clause 12 of the new bill. This is supposed to be a consultative process with industry. The same principle as mentioned in the last point applies to section 163. Again, neither the amendment nor in the explanatory notes referring to clause 62 of the new bill is CARCOM mentioned. It simply says consult with the aviation industry. The Civil Aviation Regulations Committee has achieved a healthy spirit of cooperation and goodwill with the South African Civil Aviation Authority and the Department of Transport. Only three times in the last 15 years, as far as I can recall, has a matter been put to the vote. There is overwhelming and wide support of the Civil Aviation Regulations Committee in its present form from the aviation industry. We note that the role of the Civil Aviation Regulations Committee is proposed to be covered in the regulations rather than the Act, referred to the amendment of section 155. These regulations, if this is done, may then more easily be able to be changed by the Civil Aviation Authority or the Department of Transport without reference to the aviation industry, which will alter the reliability and independence of the present tested and tried system. The words consultative structure are used in the section 155 amendment without elaboration. The amended explanatory notes to section 155 of the current act uses the words power to make regulations and then mentions the Civil Aviation Regulations Committee, but nowhere is the extent or nature of the power mentioned. Section 74, it seems, allows the South African Civil Aviation Authority to obtain fees from sources other than directly from civil aviation. Chris Zwengenthal has covered this admirably and we support him. The addition of the words shall endeavor to consult, and I stress the word endeavor, shall endeavor to consult with the relevant shareholders to determine charges and fees is most disturbing. Section 72 allows this SACAA to exercise powers given to it, as we understand it, under any law. This is impractical and almost draconian. Does this pass constitutional muster? Section 99 needs to be checked against the Constitution. Honourable Chairman, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, please allow the Civil Aviation Regulations Committee, CARCOM, to continue in its present form. This has functioned well, has enjoyed the cooperation and support of all the branches of aviation, and is a model of government-private partnership. I thank you all.
Thank you, Honorable Robert. Mr. Robert, I also want to thank you for your presentation. But in line with our custom of doing things as a portfolio committee, I will allow members to comment on what you have just presented. Presented as a statement, as you have said. Honorable members, can I see hands? I only see one hand, which is that of Honorable Chris Hansinger. I can see Honorable Chabangu. Is your appearance on the screen saying I must give you an opportunity? I will do so. Let's hear Honorable Hansinger.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Mr. Garbutt, not just for your presentation, but also for your many years of devoted and committed involvement in the civil aviation industry, and thank you for the strong statement of consideration to extend the good work which we've seen over the years of the Civil Aviation Regulations Committee. And in light of this involvement and role of the Civil Aviation Regulation Committee, you have emphasized the importance in terms of structure and in terms of processes, maybe procedures, even in consideration of regulations related to civil aviation. But you have emphasized the word independence and the importance of check and balances. Can you give us some insight as to what this independence and check and balances currently entails in terms of functioning, in terms of roles, in also in terms of the flip side of that, in that if it is an independent structure and a separate framework that needs to be considered, there probably is also a delay in taking decisions and implementation. So please try and see it from both sides to also give us insight as to the importance of streamlining decision-making, of streamlining implementation, opposed to the importance of having a structure at an arm's length as we currently have. I would also like to ask you the question, in terms of, and given your experience and exposure to not just South African aviation sector, but also internationally, what are the structures like overseas and with other aviation stakeholders? How are decisions taken there? Do they have a similar structure as what we have? And what are the benefits? What are the sort of frontline developments in this regard? So thanks again for your presentation, and I'm looking forward to your response. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Ansinga. You can now lower your hand. Thank you very much. Let's get Honorable Shabangu Ngwane. Okay. Seemingly he was just greeting. I think that was the only comment, Mr. Garbutt. Back to you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Honorable Hansinger, for your important questions. Firstly, on the question of independence and checks and balances, the aviation industry, I needn't tell you, is a massively complex industry with all sorts of facets that have specialization within those facets. It would not be practical, and it would certainly be more valuable to have industry, all the aspects, all these facets of industry working with the CAA. One could not expect the CAA and the employees of the CAA to be involved in all these various factors, or these various facets, I should say. The other thing, of course, is that the members of the industry are on the ground. They come across the problems, they understand the problems on the ground, whereas the CAA are perhaps a little removed from the day-to-day activities in aviation. I think you make an important point about the delay. It is concerned CASA and concerned CARCOM that the delay in making a proposal to CARCOM and eventually having that proposal passed, sent to the Department of Transport and signed by the minister has taken too long. But the delay is not just on the shoulders of CARCOM. It is the other processes that also cause delays. But what I want to say is does it matter that there are delays? Because what we are talking about is incredibly important regulations, not just regulations referring to flying, but regulations referring to safety and security. So I believe that every aspect, every part of aviation should be given the opportunity, which is the case now with CARCOM, to debate, to consider, and to come up with regulations that are both practical and meaningful. Finally, overseas structures, frankly, I don't know, but I would find it most unusual if the equivalent of the SACAA in other countries did not have a close consultation process with the industry for the reasons that I have already set out. I hope, sir, that that answers your questions.
Thank you very much. Are you done, Mr. Cabet?
Yes, thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Thank you for coming and sharing your views with us. Genuinely, as you have shared to them, as we finally have time to sit and discuss amongst ourselves, we will also take into consideration your inputs. Thank you, sir. You are brilliant. The next submission will be by Mr. René Van Zyl, who is an independent aviation consultant and ICAO retiree. Sorry for taking you out of pension. Mr. Van Zyl, are you here? Are you with us?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just trying to see if you can see me at this time.
We see you very well, and now we can see your name, René Van Zyl, 100 million.
My donkey, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be able to participate in this meeting today. It's surprisingly that COVID really has made this possible, that it is through Zoom and not in personal aspect in this respect. Mr. Chairman, I would like to present my comments to you today just by means of a presentation as well. This is the first time of the Portfolio Committee. Can I just verify you can see me all right, as far as the video is concerned?
Yeah, we see your name, not your face.
Okay, so is that better?
Now we see the real face behind the name we have just seen.
Thank you very much. I'll try and just activate my presentation, please, sir. And what I would just like to do is just base my presentation on the memorandum that was published in the Gaza Gazette. And just a little bit of background, Mr. Chairman, I've had about 30 years as a regulator in the old Department of Transport, thereafter joined ICAO, and after that, for about 13 years, I presented training on behalf of the International Airline Transport Association worldwide. Now, COVID obviously has made stop that altogether, but I have 53 years of experience in aviation. I've traveled the world, and I think I'm one of the few people that can say I have dealt with all aspects of civil aviation. So I hope that just my comments are not criticism. It is really just to provide assistance of what I would like to the Portfolio Committee to give some consideration on the amendment. The reality is that we only have an opportunity every 10 years to make improvements to the acts that we have that deals with civil aviation. And this one really is going to determine, I think, for the next 10 years, what happens post-COVID in South Africa. So it's very important, sir, and I think you have a very tremendous task to ensure that the act that comes into place does in fact serve the civil aviation community and South Africa as a whole. I have some main comments on 13 clauses only of the objects of the determinant in the memorandum. The first one I really have some comments on, Mr. Chairman, is that of the change of director to commissioner. The reality is in prior to 1970, we had a National Transport Commission, which consisted of persons representing the industry. That would be land transport, maritime aspects, all of that, all were commissioners. And there was a commissioner for civil aviation, which at that time was a Colonel Bob Priller, and civilian, not a public servant. I think he was a pilot flying for either Eskom or Iskor at the time. I can't remember anymore. And then we had a separate director of civil aviation in the public service, responsible for the management of the old state airports and then safety. And at that time, security was not really a major issue as we have today. With the retirement of Mr. Sally de Toey, then the positions were combined and the CAA also became a public servant and had both functions. That is where the National Transport Commission really dealt with economic regulation and the Director of Civil Aviation dealt with safety and security. These were now combined. So the use of the word director is pretty well relevant in most parts of the world. And such as that in 2009 version of the Civil Aviation Act, that was changed to director, which I believe is more relevant to what is happening in the rest of the world. So I have very concerns whether there's really a need to change from a director back to the commissioner. It will involve rewriting with documentation, software, all of those aspects, and there is a cost implication. I'm really concerned that this is mainly an ego issue that you have to, that there is a proposal for changing of that word. And I would really like to urge the portfolio committee to review that situation where there's a real need for the changing of a name. That is the one aspect on that clause. There's also some other issues in the definitions that is proposed in the bill. But I believe this is really can be dealt with by the department. There's some corrections to the definitions. That is in respect of aerodrome manager, designated airports, heliports. For example, heli stop is really not used by ICAO at all, only heliport. But I think that the DOT really can assist the portfolio committee and in resolving that aspects for it. Main issue for me in the definitions is, and I think it's been raised before in the discussions this morning, is that the appointment of the executive responsible for aircraft accident incident investigation. The reality is, unfortunately, and it has been the case for years, and the criticism that we've had for years in South Africa is that the CAA is investigating itself. There is that need for separation. There's a need for that independence. It's supported by ICAO. It's, in fact, will becoming a standard in the future. The European Commission has forced each and every one of the member states to have an independent accident investigation authority. The big issue is with the definition of the executive responsible for the investigation. If that person is reported by the CIA, this conflict of interest will continue to exist. So this is something that I believe the Transport Commission should give some attention to. The big other aspects, just very small aspects, Mr. Chairman, was in Clause 2 on Section 2, dealing with the exemptions and ECRA belonging to the South African National Defence Force. I think in practice, one needs just to be careful about how the impact of wording in the bill can be. Then in Section 142.2, it says, we accept with the written permission of the minister of the person in the service of the state authorized by the minister, no person shall convey any conventional arms or drugs. So the big challenge then comes in, does that now mean where we have shared airports, such as at Bloemfontein, Cape Town, where the military shares an airport, does it now mean the minister has to give approval for any Air Force or police services aircraft when they do carry conventional arms on board? And they have to. That's a function of the military and the police. They have to be manned. The batteries shoot back. They have to deal with it. So I do believe that that needs to look at the practical aspects, whether that is the intent of that part of it. And Clause 8, Section 11, I'm not sure. It seems to me to be exactly the same as the previous Act, so maybe the department can just verify what that situation is on that particular one. Now, my main concern really, Mr. Chairman, and I'm really very happy that I have the opportunity to be able to address the Portfolio Committee on this, is issue is the independence of an investigation. And in fact here it says, should ensure the investigation procedure practices are compatible with any international agreements or conventions to which the Republic is a party. So it's really very necessary to look at this independence. And it's really come to the fore with the accident of the Cessna citation. Here we really find that the CIA, they can argue it's independent, but the reality is, Chair, the persons involved in the CIA are appointed by the director and his or her staff. So whatever happens there, if there's no independence in the aspect, the person is at risk. And I can just, by example, mention to you some aspects of this. When I returned from ICAO, I was appointed as an acting executive chair while the Act was being revised. And I had to investigate the accident and an overrun of an Airlink aircraft at George Airport. And one of the aspects that really came out was I had to tell the director of civil aviation, sir, your aerodrome department is not competent. You do not have adequate staff involved. So I criticize him. But who in fact renews my contract as a consultant? It's that very same director. So you can have that conflict where if there's no independence, the CIA people can be reluctant to criticize what is happening in the CIA. So the big challenge comes in is the independence aspects. And I really would suggest that if we're going to have an act in place for the next 10 years, this is something that needs to be looked at very carefully. Maybe the time is right now to have a multimodal investigation authority looking at all modes of transport. Many entities in the world has that aspect in that respect. Currently, the CIA regards and says yes, but the report is submitted to the minister and not to the CIA. That's fine. But remember, if that report contains anything which criticizes the proposed commissioner, that person may not get his performance bonus for that time. So this is challenges that do come in. And even with the reporting to the Minister of Transport of the report of the investigation, keep in mind that that minister is responsible for the CIA and its activities. Hence, we've seen that ICAO is very clear in saying the investigating authority should not report to the same minister responsible for the regulation or safety oversight of civil aviation in the state or to a judicial authority. So this is aspects that needs to be dealt with. So emphasis is the investigating authority should not report to the same minister for the safety oversight. So I said, yes, fine. The preferred aspect from the ICAO guidance is that report should be to a designated minister or parliament, something such as yourselves, the reporting should be done to, or the minister in the presidency, but not to the Minister of Transport, because we do need that check and balances, Chair. There is that issue for check and balances. So I really would suggest that the Portfolio Committee really needs to look very careful. We're going to have an act that's going to be with us for 10 years. If we don't make the right changes now, South Africa is going to be subjected to this question of independence. We do not know how successful this investigation of the Cessna Citation accident is involved, because there's definitely operational aspects involved in this. And we need to look at how this can be done in the future, Mr. Chairman. So Chairman, there again, the issue comes in with ASIP. ASIP has been in existence from 2009. So the big issue is the members of the board, Big Changes really was arguing that there are no suitable persons to appoint as members of the board. But I did note that the number of persons have been reduced now, or is proposed to be reduced, because the previous portfolio committee for the 29 amendment, that introduced an additional deputy chairperson. So this is something that one needs to keep in mind as well. And there needs to be transparency in the appointment. There must be competency in the board members. This is really an important aspect. There that comes in when you deal with aspects of competency, then there's the wording there that says other relevant expertise or qualifications. My question is just, who will be assessing this? There must be some form of guidance given, or who will be dealing with this as well. So section 18, sir, there was really just a typo correction with a reference to the constitution. And then the big issue is in the powers of the Aviation Safety Board, the financial implications. And Mr. Chairman, this is a very, very difficult one, a major accident can be of significant consequences. I recall during the World Cup, I had to advise the director of civil aviation at the time, if we lose an aircraft into False Bay or into Port Elizabeth in the sea, I will be coming to him and asking for a budget of 2 billion rand to do an underwater recovery and investigation. It's a very expensive aspect. So financial implications needs to be very carefully considered when we look at those aspects. I would like to suggest there's some issues about the funding aspects. Right now, of course, the department is providing a grant, and I believe it's an order of 20 million rand a year, to the Civil Aviation Authority to do accident investigation on its behalf. But if you have a major accident, there will have to be additional funding allocated from government to do a major investigation. So those aspects needs to be very carefully considered, whether there is adequate provision made for it in that respect. In search and rescue, also search and seizure by appointed investigators, Mr. Chairman, this is a very difficult issue, because there is the constitutional aspect, and then the big challenge that comes in, the content certificate of appointment, how that is prescribed. You need to be very careful about victimization or fruitless actions that can be undertaken. The issue of return of seized property, that is, comes in whether the owner is entitled to damages. I had a situation once where an investigator lost an engine. It went missing after it was stripped down, and the taxpayer had to refund the owner for the loss of that engine. So there is those aspects that needs to be dealt with. You seize property or you destroy that property, the investigator, what is the issue of damages involvement with this? And then, of course, if there is in Section 14, the investigation reports, that there is a need. The target date for completion of an investigation is 12 months. At any time, the investigator can issue a preliminary report if there is something that needs to be given urgent attention to. But there's also the need for a compulsory interim statement every 12 months. If you do not complete your investigation, you should have an interim statement. And I think this should be included in that section. As far as the rules are concerned, Mr. Chairman, in Section 63, I think the Department of Finance should be involved. I've heard the use of the word check and balances earlier this morning as well. And what one has to keep in mind, that the ASEP will be a monopoly, as is the case with AT&S and with AXA. They have a monopoly situation. You don't have free market forces that really deal with it in that respect. So one has to keep that in mind, please. The last one, nearly last one, Mr. Chairman, is the issue of fees and charges. I think that has been addressed to quite some extent here as well. There's been the issue of the CARCOM involvement. CARCOM has been existent for many years. It has developed it is, and there is a real aspect here with the issue of fees and charges. And yeah, I can just mention, I think I'm very in support of what Mr. Swachenthal and Aza has said as far as CIA being a preferential status. One has to keep in mind that in aviation, airlines, any aviation activity cannot take place without access to an airport. So an airport or aerodrome is an essential part of our aviation industry. The same goes with the provisioning of air traffic services. That is just essential. You then need the operators themselves to be able to participate. You need to have the maintenance organizations to ensure aircraft are being maintained. Then you have to have the CAA, which is really to make things happen in the country. That must coordinate all those activities, that there's clear coordination between airports, air traffic services, operators, maintenance organizations, all of this to enable to have a successful aviation and development of aviation in the country. And we've been very successful in South Africa. South Africa has the biggest fleet of airplanes in the country, in Africa. We need to understand as well that we have commercial activities, and we have general aviation. General aviation includes sporting activities, very active activity that we have in South Africa, because we have the weather, we have the distances between countries, between cities, which makes the use of air travel feasible. So the big issue is, and I think this has been addressed really both by Mr. Garvet and Mr. Zweifenthal, that the issue of fees and charges really needs to be looked at very carefully. So I'm in great support of what has been said by ASA and CASA in this respect. Mr. Chairman, on clause 14, just a small aspect as well. It's proposed here that the words attempting to influence the commissioner or director should decide be added to the text. So this is that aspect. What I have a concern with is on section 1999 proposal, the expansion of that limitation of liabilities to white. This, I believe, should only be restricted in terms of the Civil Aviation Act to that employees of the Civil Aviation Authority. AXA, your airports owners, your air traffic services, operators, maintenance organizations, all those are service providers. And one should be very careful not to have an extension of the liability without and going beyond the rule of law in that respect. Clause 32 really just dealt with section 31, the word reasonable. And then there's also the issue of a warrant. In our constitution, as I understand it, you can do inspection at any one time to ensure there's compliance with the regulations. But if you wish to seize or take documents with the issue of prosecution, that should be done under a warrant. So the big issue is that needs to be dealt with purposely, very clearly. When is a warrant necessary, and to keep that in mind with the provision that changes to clause 32. And one major one, Mr. Chairman, is the issue of exemptions. I was very surprised in the 2009 issue to have seen that the Director of Civil Aviation can grant exemptions to the Act, which is, I think, totally out of line, taking the power, providing power beyond what I think is that of Parliament's function. But the issue is to say that the Minister must grant exemptions to any exemption will not be practical. If that includes regulations, the minister's office will be swamped by exemption requests. It is unfortunately at times necessary for exemptions to be granted, but I think there must be a clear distinction made that the minister will grant exemptions to the Act, but the director or commissioner will be able to grant exemptions in terms of the regulations. Otherwise, it will not be practical. It is not, ministers are busy. They cannot always respond immediately. When you deal with exemptions, you're looking at basically within a few hours that you must get a response in that respect. So this really, I think the department should have a real look at the wording that we dealt with, to make a separation between the Act and the Civil Aviation Regulations. Other clauses which deal with is the issue of functions of authorized officers and persons. There's a very distinct function in the functions which is intended by a authorized officer and a person. And then you also have differences between your security and your safety activities of this as well. So this really needs to be taken account. I think Mr. Wildenboer tomorrow will probably have expand on these issues. I just mentioned I have consulted with Mr. Wildenboer as well. We've worked together for many, many years in the department as well as in civil aviation. And I think we share the same passion that the legislation should be adequate to ensure civil aviation functioning in the correct way. Small editorial in 143, the Tokyo Convention, which you do not need to continue with the other aspects for it. That needs to be corrected. Then in establishment of a fees committee, that is it. So I think Mr. Garbutt has also very well expressed what is happening in the CARCOM environment, so I'm not going to expand on that aspect. So, Mr. Chairman, basically here it is the aspect of the international standards. I think the main objection of the department has been that it is called for that an officer in the CAA or in the department shall have a copy of a standard or a requirement which is not published in the regulation. If that is deleted, that section 3 is deleted in that respect, that basically will result in the person subject to regulation not knowing what is in fact required by that international standard. So that really, I do not think that section 3 should be deleted at all. That to be able to purchase ICAO documentation or any other documentation is a very expensive exercise. And if you want to subject people to standards, then there must be some form of way of making access to that information available. So I would urge that paragraph 3, in fact, should not be deleted, but should be retained. So, Chairman, that basically concludes my submission to you as a portfolio committee. I trust that it is helpful, the comment that I can make in this regard. I'm a totally aviation-orientated person, and I have an interest to ensure that South Africa has a very successful aviation act that will allow the recovery of our airlines, our industry in total in the post-COVID era. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be able to have presented my comments to you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Rene van Sail, thank you very much for the detailed presentation, and also thank you very much for sharing your 53 years of experience in this industry. I can assure you some of the members of the portfolio committee were not yet born when we started working in this industry. That's for sure. So we're learning a lot from you, and thank you very much. Otherwise, it is a norm of this portfolio committee to, after each and every presentation, to allow members, if they have anything to say or ask whilst you are still here or comment, they should be allowed, and we are going to invite honorable members to do so to you, sir. We have currently two hands. That is Honorable McDonald will start, followed by Honorable Chris Hansinger, and I can see Honorable Manu Chambers has joined. In that order, honorable members, thank you.
As I lower my hand, Chairperson, thank you very much. I also welcome the presentation by Rene van Sail. He's an absolute honor to be to hear him speak, and his wisdom and knowledge of his 53 years in the aviation industry. Chairperson, I think as a committee, we are really in sort of a conundrum, because I just went quickly through Annex 13 of the ICAO legislation regarding accident investigation, and it says the responsibility of the state conducting the investigation, the accident, and under 5.4 general, the accident investigation authority shall have independence in the conduct of the investigation and have unrestricted authority over its conduct. Consistent with the provisions of this annex, investigations shall include, and there's a lot of other things there, Chairperson. I think, Chairperson, that we might not have an option but to have the Accident Investigation Board to be separate from this. My interpretation of the ICAO Act, Chairperson. And I also think that Rennie has touched an issue regarding the finances when there's an investigation, and I think that somehow we must make provision for this, because he, rightly so, an investigation can cost millions and millions of rands. I think the investigation in the Malaysian jet that is missing has now reached in the region of $5 billion, and they still haven't even found the plane yet. And it's one of those things that, God forbid, it should happen in South Africa, that we should be ready for something like that, Chairperson. I also agree with most of the things that he said, especially the part where the minister has to agree on the arms and ammunition. I agree with what he said there, that we will have to reword it there, because it's going to be a big problem when we have armed forces departing from civil airports, and it's not just Cape Town and Bloemfontein, and there's many occasions where South African Air Force planes use normal general aviation airports for their operations, Chairperson. Otherwise, Chairperson, I'm covered. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Baya Akbar Eliade.
It's 11 hours.
Let us know, Akbar Eliade, Chris Hunsinger, can't hear on the plant.
Ngozi Gakulu, Chairperson. Chairperson, Mr. Rennie van Zyl, thank you very much for your comprehensive contribution to this review of our aviation structure and framework under consideration currently in the form that we have had it published. You mentioned the importance of a independent investigative structure with all sorts of supportive ideas around how this can be enhanced. What would the ideal structure be, given your experience, not just locally, but also in international experience? What would the ideal structure be? Secondly, I want to bounce an idea with you. We've received, as public representatives, privilege to serve in the National Portfolio Committee of Transport. We've often had queries from family members, particularly around the causes of a plane crash following a sad incident of that nature. But then the obligation of, as it currently stands, not having any reason to report to family members. In other words, following a crash and in the current legislative framework, there's no obligation for the investigation team to report to the family, and it just leaves them in the dark. And as a public representative, I think this should be changed. So therefore, what are your ideas around this? And a straight question, whether you think a inquest should be triggered naturally once such an incident has occurred. My third and last question, Chairperson, to Mr. Rennie van Zyl, is one which I think he has pondered a lot on, given the huge disruption which COVID-19 has caused on the aviation industry, and the fact that, you know, it seems like a cyclical event that from time to time we review aviation legislation like we currently do. In light of COVID-19 and the huge disruption of COVID-19 and lockdown measures, and the opportunity then to change legislation going forward, do you think we are on the right way with what we've got tabled currently? And what would you see the main features to be, and what should it be that we should consider rather than what we currently consider around a restructuring of aviation industry and functioning for the future? Thank you, Mr. Rennie, for your contribution, not just verbally, but also in written submissions. The lack of more questions is simply because of the huge detail that you submitted. So thank you for that, sir. It's hugely appreciated. Thank you, Chair.
I can assure Mr. Rennie that you were already born when he started working for this industry, Honorable Member. Thank you.
Sorry, Chair, I couldn't quite hear you there, so let's rather carry on with the meeting.
Okay, thank you. Let's get Honorable Manu.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Thank you to the presenter. Well, I'm more curious in your suggestion of ICAO. I think you said they propose or suggest that in any investigating authority in this space should not report to a minister, in this case of transport. You made suggestions to the portfolio committee and so forth. But I would like to broaden it and invite your comment there, because I think it goes further maybe to suggest other areas that should be there. Interestingly, is ICAO even suggests a Department of Trade and Industry, or of trade generally, being responsible for these. One of the issues they raise is that we should consider independent or under the control of an entity that regulates the technical aspects of civil aviation, separate from or part of domestic air transport regulatory entity. Now, I'm sure you know these more than I do. However, my question is, are there any experiences, are there any reference points anywhere in the world where we can refer to and say, in such and such a country, this is what is happening? That would be very, very interesting to know. Secondly, you mentioned something I couldn't remember on what reference, but that in 12 months' time, we should conclude investigations, or if you fail to do so, at least issue an interim report in 12 months' time. My direct question, as my colleague Honorable Unsinga would say, can I invite your comments on the process that has been undertaken so far in the crash that happened of a civil aviation aircraft in George, or the mountains thereof? And my question specific, without putting you on the spot, is what could have been done differently had we had a proper separation, or whatever the case is, in terms of infrastructure or positioning of those entities? Now, lastly, you spoke a lot about the exemption to the Act being under the responsibility of the director, minister, or on so forth. There is just a comment. You know, when the Act at times says the minister, it doesn't mean the person of the minister, but it means the office or the authority bestowed on the minister, which a minister, he or she, can delegate to anybody in there. So I think we should rather look at the proper positioning or placement of a particular function, in this case, the exemption or non-exemption thereof, of either regulations or the Act, rather than look at a minister or a person in saying they are very busy and so forth. So I would like to hear your comment without looking at the schedule of a minister or not, because it's about the authority he or she has, in my view. What would be your view in that regard? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to know, what is your position internationally as far as investigators are concerned? Do they make use of investigators from different countries, or only local investigators? Thank you.
Baie dankie, Akbare Piet May.
Ja.
Ekskuus dat ek nie jou ander gesien het. Dankie.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think we are done if we are not leaving any honorable member outside, including those that cannot raise their hand here and see them. Okay. Reni, we want to come back to you and give you an opportunity, sir, to respond to the questions that have been given and the comments, if you may. The opportunity is yours.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. It's really very pleasant to be able to discuss this matter with you. I think the main question I want to respond back was the ideal structure. The ideal is, yes, one would like to have the investigation separate from the CIA. Remember, the CIA provides a service, data service regulator. There can be things which is done incorrectly. Now, the emphasis here is, Mr. Chairman, the intent of the what we call an Annex 13 investigation is not to apportion blame or liability. It is what went wrong. And that includes what has gone wrong in the CIA. What were regulatory shortcomings? What were oversight shortcomings? So the ideal structure is to have something completely separate where an investigator, and I need to emphasize the word, a trained investigator, can question the CIA. How did your state safety program function? How did your the oversight in terms of your state safety program function? Have clear understanding what is the role of the CIA in the cause of an accident. They could be part of it. In such that the emphasis of the independence is so important in that respect, that can the investigator can make a finding and without fear of victimization or retribution. That's the emphasis on the investigation. The other aspect of the investigation is that there can't be a cover-up. This is the important aspect for it. The annex has been amended through the years, Annex 13, to ensure that the report is made public and it's not for the purpose of punitive action. It is that the public knows what is happening, what is the confidence in aviation as a mode of travel. So the independence is the ideal structure. The big challenge that comes in is the funding. And here I must state quite clearly, there's only about 70 to 80 states of the 193 states that have ratified the convention that have an independent entity. The rest is having the same problems as we have in South Africa, is how do you fund it? How can you separate the funding? But the reality is at this time, the department is already funding accident investigation. What it means is to create ASIP, they will just have to increase it. And I understand that the struggle that is there being that Treasury says, you want to increase funding, you readjust your budget. You find that money in your own budget and you support them in that respect. So that is the big challenge that you find worldwide, how it cannot be done. What I do like is what has been happening in Nigeria. Nigeria said, fine, we have to have an independent investigation authority, which they did create. They said, but come on, Mr. Passenger, you will give us 3% of your passenger charge will be paid into a fund to support accident investigation. Sure, it does mean there will have to continue to be support from the department or the government in major accidents, but that you can have a kitty build up through the years in which you can fund your investigations. And this is what I've never been successful in selling that idea in South Africa. I hope that maybe this is something that Portfolio Committee can consider, that yes, part of the passenger safety charge, and remember in all fairness, The passenger safety charge that the passenger in South Africa pays is not much. He doesn't even realize he's paying that safety charge. And if there is an increase in the safety charge and percentage of that is paid towards a fund to do accident investigation, that would be the way that I would propose this portfolio committee should consider. This would be as far as the ideal structure is concerned. And to have that chairman of ASIP not reporting to the Minister of Transport, but reporting to Parliament, that would be, to my mind, because every report has to be made public. So this is the important aspect, the ideal structure that I see that would serve South Africa best in that respect. The issue on the family members, Mr. Chairman, is something which dates back to the Lockerbie accident, where there were no support for passengers next of kin waiting in New York. The Americans introduced a requirement that the National Transportation Safety Board, their accident investigating authority, which is multimodal, shall assist passengers. South Africa has taken the other route. The emphasis has been that the operator will have a process in which to support passengers. Now, that's fine for the airlines that that is in place, but it does leave the individual, the general aviation accident, that one person fatality, that is left out of the loop. So yes, this is something that needs to be addressed too. But I do believe that must be a function of ASIP, such as is with the National Transport Safety Board in the United States, that ASIP should have a support for the next of kin and in fact keep next of kin informed. And this is really that where we mentioned the interim safety board as a mandatory requirement that there shall be a factual report on the progress of the investigation, keeping the next of kin informed of what is happening in that respect. So this is something that I do not believe necessarily needs a prescription in the bill, but that it should be a function of the ASIP to keep family members involved. And being independent of the CAA, they can have a factual requirement what has been happening in that respect. So this is a major one. The big issue has been that with fatal accidents, Mr. Chairman, a fatal accident is a crime scene. It calls for involvement with the police. There's the need for an inquest to be held. The Inquest Act is very clear on that aspect for unnatural death. So that is an aspect that unfortunately we have seen in many accidents, fatal accidents in Africa, there's never been an inquest held. And there's been significant problems as far as post-mortem and toxicological reports were being involved with it. So yes, an inquest is in existence. But it's unfortunately a situation, I think, the Department of Justice has some difficulty in keeping up with the number of inquests that needs to be held. But that, I think, is adequately in place. There's no need for an inquest to be mentioned in the Civil Aviation Act. We did have the difficulty, and Mr. Chairman, sorry, I'm digressing, but with the Margot Commission, with the Helderberg, Samora Machel, the Aviation Act at the time made a provision that the chair of the Board of Inquiry can also chair the inquest. And that did not work because you must have a clear separation between your judicial aspect of blame and responsibility and that of the Annex 13 investigation, which is a requirement for it. So I believe if we create ASIP, we can have that clear distinction vested clearly as far as the Department of Justice, you have the inquest. There's nothing that stops an inquest from being undertaken whilst the ASIP is doing an investigation. just in practice, the police have been developing a process of waiting the report from the CIA before they will refer the matter to the for an inquest to be held. So this is a big challenge for us. As far as the COVID and the way in which we dealt with, I believe that the way in which the government of the day has set up economic regulation and policy is vested with the department, safety and security of the CIA is the correct way to go. And you'll have every different acts that deals with the economic regulation. That should remain as it is. I think you're well on the way with what you are doing as far as the Civil Aviation Bill is concerned in creating that situation for the airline operation and even general aviation to recover post-COVID. So this is an important aspect for it in that respect, Mr. Chairman. So the big challenge comes in, as I said, in other countries. Yes, there's the same difficulty. But we've seen many countries in the world, even with lesser economies than South Africa, that have created an independent investigating authority. And for aviation, that is the way we need to go. That is a big challenge that we have in it. I've had the opportunity, Mr. Chairman, of traveling the world and, in fact, auditing aviation investigating authorities in many parts of the world for how there is compliance with the annexes. But I do believe that if we do create ASIP now and it is staffed by the department, then we will have achieved what is the intention for the future. The big issue on our accident with the calibration aircraft operated by the CIA, I believe that at this stage, of course, it's the right time for the decision to be made that the calibration function should not be vested in the department. I do not believe this requires a civil aviation prescription. It is purely a policy decision by the minister who that function should be dealt with. My preferred view to have that done as a service by ATNS, who will recover the cost therefrom from the airport owners who has ILS information or has an ILS or navigational aids. That is what I would like to see. The investigation of civil aviation accident, I feel that the minister should have delegated that from day one, and the CIA should have stood back and said no. Right now, I believe that it has been delegated to Ethiopian Accident Investigating Authority. The problem, of course, is the Accident Investigating Authority of Ethiopia can only react on what information is provided to them by the CIA. They really will have no judicial powers in seizure or access to documentation at all. So this is the type of problems that you have. I'm very interested to see what will be forthcoming from that investigation, but I believe that probably should have done from day one. Ethiopia has had quite a lot of experience with the MAX 737 accident in which they have are investigating. So that is the importance as far as the ASIP involvement is concerned, Mr. Chairman. As far as exemptions are concerned, I really agree with what is being said. The minister should make the high-level decision. He should not be burdened with the day-to-day running of an aviation industry. But the regulations really deal with how aviation functions in the country. And I think there, the emphasis should be that delegation should be to the Director of Civil Aviation to be able to grant exemption in terms of the regulations, not in terms of the Act. The Director cannot grant exemptions from the Act, but can't grant, can grant, and should be able to grant exemptions from the civil aviation regulations. Mr. Chairman, this is as far as my comments are concerned with it here. I'd really wish you as the Portfolio Commission all the best in coming up with a bill to submit to the President that will manage and control aviation for the next 10 years. Hopefully it will not be necessary to amend it again. But your committee will be agreeing on today will control civil aviation for the next 10 years. Thank you for the opportunity to have addressed you and for the committee members. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Let's at this stage wish you all of the best in your retirement. We will love from time to time as you feel like contributing as you have contributed, really to give that opportunity, because this committee, I can tell you that it is committed as a committee to try and take on board everybody that has the best interest of this industry at heart as we shape the next generation of legislation on this industry. I can assure you on behalf of this committee that when we sit dealing with all these presentations, we will also take into consideration and take into heart your presentations today. We want to thank you for having made time to come and sit with us. Not only you, I can see that Robert is still with us here, and I can't see Chris, but let me thank all these presenters, including yourself, for having made time to come and talk to us and influence us in our thinking because of your experience. Thank you very much. I would want to take this opportunity to release you, sir. Thank you. Thank you, honorable members. The departmental officials that are here with us today, I've seen their names here. I think we have all yet. Let me take this opportunity to thank you from Cookie to Kaiser, everybody, Dr. Sfiso, Masati. I can see Miriam here. Let me just request that tomorrow, as we log in, those who will be presenting, let's use the names of the associations or companies which we represent, use the name of the departments that we represent, because we are here for a particular company or department. Unless you are an independent or consultant, we'll also like to know that. Otherwise, let's meet here at the same place tomorrow to come and listen to two presentations. Otherwise, I see somebody who has forgotten to lower their hands when I'm summarizing, but let me hear, because this is one of the veteran of the committee, Honorable Hansinger, am I forgetting something?
Thank you, Chairperson, also for your indulgence in taking my hand. I would like to know, Chairperson, apart from the department, are we getting more submissions on this particular amendment bill?
Masati?
Chairperson?
Could you kindly respond to that question?
Yes, Chairperson, we do have tomorrow Mr. Hemen Velderboer.
According to my schedule, that is the only submission we're dealing with tomorrow. Am I correct?
Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, there's been a specific reference to a particular detail of some of the submissions, and I wouldn't want to wait right at the end for your consideration, Chairperson, to ask the department and civil aviation then to give us some details specifically on the monies, fees, charges and levies. It is quite clear that there should be a differentiation because there was emphasis on a variety of these particular fees, monies, charges and levies. And what is intended, or as it is currently written, all and any fees of civil aviation should be subjected to their preferential status then as suggested in this bill. So what I'm asking, Chair, is as part of the department's submission, whether they could give us some insight on the differentiated monies and charges and levies and tariffs that we heard of today. It would be rather insightful and it would give us the opportunity then to differentiate between those aspects. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Member, you have made a crucial input. Thank you for that. Let me check. I can see Masombuga is here, advocate.
Chairperson, I note the request by the Honourable Member, and I've heard him very clear. Thanks.
Are you once again representing the department?
Yes.
Oh, that's okay, advocate. Let's do our best. Otherwise, you are released from this beautiful, constructive, progressive, value for money meeting of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you very much for all those who participated. I hope Honorable Sithole did not have problems of connecting. I've not heard his voice and it's unlike him. Let me just take it for granted that he has taken liberty to be a bit quiet today. Otherwise, Danki, Baya and Alma. Yes, ma'am.
My apology, Chairperson. Mr. Sithole is attending tourism. He has sent an apology.
Okay, that apology was not noted earlier on. Let's note it, although it's late. Any other person we are leaving, Mashati, who has apologized?
Valerie did mention at the beginning of the meeting, Ms. Noluchungu and Mr. Sithole.
Oh, okay. I missed the name of Honorable Sithole. Thank you very much. You are released. Long live everybody.
Thank you, Chairperson. See you afternoon.
Thank you. I like your background, Honorable Hunsinger. Goodbye.
Very academic, eh?
Long live the chair. Long live the chair.
Long live Honorable Hunsinger, long live.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. Same to you, my colleague.
Thank you. Let's see each other in the afternoon. In the house.